Okay. Welcome, people of Earth, to the fourth annual Mini Science. My name is Martin Grant. I'm the Dean of the Faculty of Science. This year's series focuses on pseudoscience, from quirks to quacks. And it's just fun to say that, actually. So beginning tonight, we have Dr. Joe and his scientific analysis of the paranormal. And we're going to conclude with the series sponsor, Lauren Trache, who exposed the real dangers, or not, of Wi-Fi and cell phone waves. The mini-series was started at McGill by Cappy Flanders, and Cappy is unfortunately unable to make it here. They're a faculty-based public lecture series that she started in 2001 with MiniMed. Cappy is a member of the McGill University Board of Governors and co-chair of Montreal's Council on Palliative Care. She'll be here for the other pseudoscience lectures in mini-science. We were going to have it in Redpath, but we've moved over here to make access easier, and the chairs at least are a little more comfortable than they are in Redpath. But if anyone wants to check out Redpath Museum and check out the dinosaurs, they're more than welcome to do so. At the end of tonight's lecture, the format of these things is that people write down questions, and then they're brought up to me, and I sort through, or somebody sorts them through for me, and I read the questions to Joe, and then Joe will answer them to everyone. If we can't answer them all, we'll refer some of the best questions to Joe later and post them on the website. Please do not ask any questions you would not want us to answer in front of a full auditorium. Or maybe do it. It might be more fun that way. In addition, please complete the evaluation form and give these to the volunteers on your way out. Your feedback is important to us, and please turn off your cell phones and stuff like that. Okay. So tonight's talk is Science and the Paranormal. And Joe summarized this topic in this way. History is peppered with accounts of psychics predicting the future, mediums conversing with the dead, and aliens abducting earthlings. Who could resist this talk? Anyway, today psychic surgeons claim to remove tumors without making incisions, and paranormalists bend spoons with the power of their minds. Tonight, Joe will tell you what science says about these claims. Joe received his PhD from McGill in 1973 and is director of McGill University's Office for Science and Society, which is dedicated to demystifying science for the public, the media, and students. He also teaches a variety of courses with emphasis on health issues and the application of chemistry to everyday life. Joe Schwartz has received numerous awards for teaching chemistry and for interpreting science for the public. Among these are the Royal Society of Canada's McNeil Award and the American Chemical Society's prestigious Grady Stack Award. He's appeared hundreds of times on TV and radio. His books have been translated into 5 languages and are sold around the world. His most recent works are An Apple a Day and Brain Fuel. With that, I pass it to Joe. Take it over.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, there was a gentleman who went to the doctor with a rather strange complaint. He thought he was dead. The physician, being a proper McGill graduate, immediately recognized that he must be delusional, but he didn't know how to prove it to the gentleman. So he asked him a question and said, "Sir, tell me, do dead men bleed?" He said, "Of course not. They have no circulation. Dead men don't bleed." At which point the doctor took out a needle and asked the gentleman for his hand, and he pricked his finger, and of course blood spurted out. At this point the doctor looked at him with a gleam of triumph in his eye. "You see?" He saw the man had a quizzical look on his face. He said, "Yes, doctor, I guess I was wrong. Dead men do bleed." There's, of course, a point to that story. And the point is that he made the right observation but came to the wrong conclusion. And that really is the theme of everything that we're going to chat about here tonight. We are going to talk about the paranormal. Well, what does that really mean, the paranormal? The term itself translates from the Latin for beyond normal, Para means beyond. What we're talking about are phenomena that are beyond the scope of science. At least that's what the perception is. Whether they really are or not is exactly the topic of our discussion here tonight. The appropriate place to start such a discussion would be with the art of magic, because magicians appear to be paranormalists, don't they? What do magicians do? They seem to do the impossible. They take ladies and divide them into three, the classic illusion, the zigzag. Well, of course, our logic tells us that that really cannot be. It must be an illusion of some kind. How do they do this? Do they really do it by dematerializing the person and rematerializing them? Well, I like that particular illusion. It is one of magic's signature illusions. But I don't like to perform it exactly that way, because you have to carry around big equipment and big women. So I like to do it in a more simple way, with small portable cabinets and small portable women. So let's put my lady into the cabinet like this and proceed to do the zigzag just like there. Of course, we're doing it on a much smaller scale. But as you see, the illusion is perfect because it really does look as if I can put my hand right through there. Right through her middle, and yet we know that that's not possible because she is, of course, totally intact and tough as nails. What we saw here, of course, is a classic magic illusion. And I will tell you that it has absolutely nothing to do with the paranormal. It is done by perfectly explicable scientific means, which hopefully you will never find out. Because that's really the practice of magic, is to do wondrous things and puzzle the mind of the audience. You never reveal how a trick is done, because once you do that, the magic is gone, and a wonderful illusion becomes a silly little trick. But magic is wonderful when you are presenting it as magic. However, when it is presented as being something other, then it becomes a totally different story. Magicians, of course, can cause ladies to levitate on the stage. But you know full well that if you see that, she's being held from the back, pushed from the bottom, or held from the top, without, of course, knowing how this is actually happening. It can be performed pretty easily on the stage. But remember what a magician is. A magician is an actor playing the role of a magician. Nothing that we do is done by paranormal means. It's all scientifically explicable. We can do our levitations. Again, I like to do it on a smaller scale. No need to carry around the large subjects. So we will do this purely with this little ball. Now, what we're going to do is defy gravity and cause it to levitate. Somewhat of a shy character, but can peek out. Oh, come on. Get down. Get down. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking that that has something to do with it, right? And that it can't really fly on its own. Can. Obviously, it is an illusion. It really didn't levitate from the table. And hopefully you'll never find out what exactly happened there. But I will guarantee you that it has absolutely nothing to do with any paranormal phenomena. But there are people who claim that they can do such things for real, that they can levitate, that they can defy gravity because they have paranormal powers. Well, pictures like that are not very convincing, especially these days, the age of Photoshop, right? Let them demonstrate that they can do this under proper scrutiny, because the burden of proof is always on the claimant. When someone says that they can do something incredible, it is up to them to furnish the proof. It is not up to science to prove that something cannot happen. You cannot prove a negative. I can't even prove that reindeer can't fly. I don't think that they can, but I couldn't prove it to you. We could do an experiment, take one of the creatures up to the top of this building and nudge it off, and let's face it, if that animal ever in its life were motivated to fly, that's the moment. We'd have a mess at the bottom. We could repeat it again and again with, I suspect, the same results. What would we have proven? That those reindeer on this given day could not or chose not to fly. In fact, there might be some, maybe 8 reindeer, which under the right conditions and the right stimulation can fly. But it is up to those who made the claim to prove it. Let's deal with something that's close to many of our hearts, extrasensory perception, because many people believe that this is something that exists. Telephone rings, you know who it is, right? And you're satisfied that you had this perception. Well, we can investigate this. We can do scientific tests to see whether or not extrasensory perception actually exists. Let me show you how such a scientific test might be carried out. We use these classic cards that are used to test psychic phenomena, extrasensory perception. And I want to do this in a proper way, so I need a volunteer who will come down here and help me with this scientific experiment. Can we have a volunteer, the young lady right there? Don't worry, we will not make fun of you, not much. All right, I'm going to show you these cards. There's a star, a plus sign, a circle, and a square. I give you those 4, and I have 4 that match yours.
Okay.
I also have here a board so that we can keep track of this experiment. I'm going to take my cards, and I'm going to place them into my board. Obviously, I see where I am putting my cards, so I know exactly where they are located. You have no idea which cards I'm putting where. And what we're now going to do is carry out an experiment in thought transmission, better known as ESP. I'm going to ask you to show me one of those cards, anyone, take it at random. Okay, now I see that card, and I know where my card that corresponds to that is located, okay? Obviously, there's a number between 1 and 4 that I'm now transmitting mentally to you. And that number is number?
3.
Show me the next one. And now you are receiving the number
1.
Show me the next one. And the number is
4.
This is where it gets hard. Now I tell you what. You are, of course, welcome to put that in number 2. But if you think that you got the wrong message in any way, you can tell me to put that in any one of the others and switch around any way that you want.
Okay. Yeah, let's go with 2.
Okay, we'll go with 2. Okay, now let's face this. There is a mathematical chance that this would have worked out, right, by luck alone. And the probability of that happening is 1 in? We have a group of intelligent people here. The first one could be anyone of 4, the next one anyone of 3, then anyone of 2. So it's 4 factorial, 4 times 3 times 2, it's 24. There are 24 possible combinations. Okay, so it could happen by luck alone. I don't trust luck, I trust my ESP, so of course we do have a perfect match. Thank you. Now, 1 in 24 is not 1 in a million, right? It can happen. So if we are scientifically inclined, what would we want to do next? We would want to repeat that experiment, right? Because 1 in 24 can happen. If we do it twice and it works, it would be 1 in 24 times 1 in 24, then we're on to something. I can assure you, if we repeated it, it would work. Right? And then the next thing that you would want to do would be to examine the apparatus. which I assure you, you will not be able to do, because you will figure out why it works every time. Right? So we indeed did not prove ESP because I cheated. And in many experiments, cheating is involved. But unfortunately, the experimenters are not always aware of the fact that cheating is involved. The point is that it is possible to design such an experiment in a proper way, under controlled conditions, where the cards can be examined, where the board can be examined, where there's a committee that scrutinizes the evidence. And the fact is that that has been done. And nobody has been able to show that ESP exists. In spite of the fact, people believe in it. Half the population believes in ESP, but of course they also believe in devils and ghosts and witches and all of this kind of stuff. We are dealing with a population where beliefs with no scientific evidence are very, very popular, especially in the U.S. We're dealing with a population where 50% of the public believes that the Earth was created 5,700 years ago. A mind-boggling statistic. So we shouldn't be surprised they believe in witches. These beliefs do not come from any scientific evidence. And they're interesting. I mean, there are people who believe that they can leave their body at will and travel great distances. The out-of-body experience. They go into a trance, they say. And they can journey anywhere in the world. As you can imagine, I was very happy one day when giving a talk similar to this, a lady says to me, I can do that. I said, okay, what do you mean? She says, I can go into a trance, leave my body, travel wherever you like, and I can come back and report to you on what I've seen. I say, great, like where? She says, Paris. So I said, okay. What is involved? Can I go with you? No. It takes years of experience to do this. I say, okay. But I said, I don't want to sound too skeptical, but how do I know that when you come back and re-enter your body and describe what you saw in Paris, that that really was happening there? And I said, look, I have a proposition. There's no need for you to exert yourself to transport your soul all the way to Paris. Here's what we can do. There's a bookcase in the corner of the room, and I had a pack of cards for a different demo. I said, look, let me just take one of these cards at random, walk over to this bookcase in the corner of the room, and take the card and put it face side up on top of this bookcase. You go into your trance, you float up to the ceiling, you float over into the corner, look down, tell me what the card is after you've re-entered your body. Well, of course, she began to hem and haw. I said that she was not a psychic guinea pig. She didn't have to demonstrate anything. If I didn't believe her, it was my fault. And that's the last peep I heard out of her for the whole lecture. Of course, she may have just left her body there and been elsewhere. I don't know. But again, the point here is that when someone makes this claim, it is testable. If you can leave your body, you should be able to tell me what the card is. Now, this out-of-body experience is quite different from the other kind of out-of-body experience that you may have heard of, which is the so-called near-death experience. Right? In the near-death experience, the event is actually scientifically explicable. People see tunnels and light, etc., and this can actually be stimulated by using magnetic fields on the brain. And it's under certain conditions of oxygen deprivation, illusions are triggered. That's quite different from willfully leaving your body. But there are many events that seem to be paranormal like that that actually have scientific explanation, like walking on a bed of hot coals. Well, there are people who give seminars on this. Tony Robbins charges thousands of dollars for a weekend seminar in which he implies that by teaching people how to walk on red hot coals, he can teach them to carry out paranormal feats because he implies that this is paranormal. It's not a paranormal feat. Very ordinary feats are involved here. And there's a very ordinary explanation here. And it's actually a quite straightforward explanation. Let me take you into your kitchen. You're baking a cake. the oven is at 375 degrees. You want to check if the cake is done. You reach into the cake, into the oven, tap the cake, no problem to your finger. Try to tap the metal pan, you'll burn your finger. How can this be? They're both at the same temperature. Well, of course, they're both at the same temperature, but they don't transfer heat exactly the same way. That bed of coals, very, very hot, but the coals are covered with a layer of soot, and that doesn't transfer heat very well. There's nothing psychic about this. Anyone can learn to do this. You do need a bit of bravado. I mean, because you do have to overcome your fear of stepping on those red hot coals, and you don't dilly-dally in the middle to have a conversation. You know, you scamper across there, but there's nothing psychic that is involved. Again, very easy to prove, and I would love to have the chance to prove this to Tony Robbins, because what I would suggest is let's take your bed of hot coals and cover it with a layer of aluminum foil. Then walk across it. And of course, he'll hot foot it out of there real quick, because you cannot do that, because the aluminum foil, of course, transfers the heat very, very effectively to the feet. So it's a scientifically explanation for what seems to be a paranormal feat. Now, we are notoriously poor observers, you know. We think we're good observers. And this is one of the biggest weapons of the paranormalists, that people are not good observers. May I show you a simple thing? You take a look at this yellow and red boomerang, as it were, and ask you the question, which one of these is longer? Oh, you're too smart. I can't fool you. Yes, of course they are the same. Of course, because what is really happening is that subconsciously your mind is comparing the long end of one to the short end of the other. And that can be, you know, quite startling. But the fact is that, of course, they are exactly the same. It's an optical illusion. There are many such things. If you take a look at this tree, many people, all they see is a tree. But if you look a bit more carefully, you see faces. Very specific faces. Right here, that's George Washington. He's in that tree. The others are all U.S. presidents. But unless your attention is called to that, you don't notice it. So we're not great observers. I'm not such a great observer either. I used to show this picture in class when I was talking about quackery and snake oil. For years and years and years. never realizing anything, never seeing anything, until one day a student pointed it out and said, oh my God. I just wasn't that great at observing. If you look at this one, it depends on how you look, right? It's either the young lady or the old hag. You can see either one. The young lady, that's her nose pointing away from you. The old hag, this is her nose, large nose, that's her mouth. Right? So, we're not so great at observing. This, of course, is just a living room lamp, right? There's the lamp, but some people see other things in there. Don't know where their mind is. I'd like you to read this passage and silently, without cheating, without talking to your neighbor, silently, count the number of times the letter F appears in this passage. Okay, who sees one, two, three? All these people see three. Who sees four? Who sees five? Who sees six? Okay, now we have an intelligent audience here. Now let me assure you that the number of times the letter F appears in that passage is fixed. We are not talking about Heisenberg uncertainty principle here. Okay? So what has happened? There actually are six letters. The ones that are usually missed are the three in the off. because your mind just skims over it. Because we're not nearly as good observers as we think we are. This is especially evident in the case of UFOs, extraterrestrial flying objects or unidentified flying objects. I mean, UFO just means unidentified. It doesn't mean that it's extraterrestrial, right? If you see something fly by your living room window until you've identified it as the neighbor's Frisbee, you've seen a UFO, right? But people see all kinds of things. They see flying saucers. Of course, depends on what they've been drinking if they see that. But we have the whole mythology of UFOs. And of course, the message is that we are being visited by aliens from outer space. And what is curious about these pictures that we see, and we do see these pictures, that these days, when everyone is running around with digital cameras, taking billions of photographs of everything in the world all the time, the pictures that we see of these UFOs all look as if they were taken by a camera made in the 1930s and being held by someone who has Parkinson's disease. How come nobody can take a proper picture? Of course, these days, we can't even trust that because anything can be photoshopped. The story about flying saucers takes us back to 1947 and the classic event that happened in Roswell, New Mexico, and there was an event. Something did happen. If you listen to the ufologists, they will tell you that what happened in 47 in Roswell, New Mexico, was the crash landing of an alien spaceship, and that the aliens in there were actually captured either dead or alive, the story varies, by the U.S. Air Force. Eventually, they even did autopsies on them, and some of you may have seen the movie about the alien autopsy. Looks very, very convincing. Until you look at some of the details in the photograph taken of that supposed autopsy, such as the telephone on the wall with the coiled wire, which was not introduced until about 1950. So this could not have been taken at that time. But something did happen at Roswell back then in New Mexico. And it was great for Roswell because, of course, it has become a mecca for tourism for all of this this stuff. Well, what happened? Relics have been recovered from the accident that actually occurred, and this is what they really look like. They don't look like parts of a flying saucer. What they look like was part of some kind of a aluminized balloon, which is exactly what happened there. There is a secret Air Force base nearby, Area 51, which many of you, of course, have heard about. And during the 1940s, at the height of the Cold War, the U.S. had all kinds of secret programs, including high-altitude balloons, which were designed to spy on Soviet satellite launches. Well, this, of course, was top secret. But the idea was that some of these balloons could actually be designed to carry humans up to great heights, and they even tested them with mannequins. One of those crashed, and a farmer actually witnessed this, and saw the Air Force trucks come and spirit away all of the remnants. And it turned out that the U.S. Air Force actually decided that it was better to let the public think that a flying saucer has landed than give away the secret information. That's what happened at Roswell, New Mexico. The reports are all there. You can read the detail. Now it's all in the open literature. And yet you have all of the ufologists, of course, arguing various kinds of conspiracy theories and pointing at dots in the sky, calling them flying saucers. It is not that it is unlikely that there is life elsewhere. In fact, I think it's very likely. It's a lot less likely that the only form of life that exists is on this insignificant little planet in an insignificant galaxy in an insignificant corner of the universe. That really defies imagination. There are undoubtedly civilizations out there that are beyond us, superior to us, and some that are inferior to us. But I think it is most unlikely that they have ever visited us because the distances are just too immense. We're talking about light years away. Light years, a fantastic distance, the amount of space covered by light traveling for 1 year. So, it is most unlikely Of course, we never say anything impossible in science, but how is it that after all of these years of discussions about UFOs, nobody has come up with the smallest bit of physical evidence? And plus, these guys are so adept at evading us, you know. Amateur and professional astronomers scour every square millimeter of the sky 24 hours a day. And yet these aliens are so good at evading us that they come through all of that space without ever having noticing anyone noticing them, only to appear in front of someone driving a pickup truck in North Dakota. That's some talent. Another reason that people believe in paranormal phenomena is because they don't really appreciate coincidence. Coincidence is interesting. Coincidence is when unlikely events happen, but they still do happen. Rare events are not impossible events, they're just rare events. The famous Kennedy dollar bill, as it is called, which was minted roughly 3 weeks prior to President Kennedy's assassination in 1963, that's a matter of historic record. After the assassination, the psychics said, this foretold the assassination because the serial number starts with the letter K and ends with A, obviously stands for Kennedy assassination. And the number 11 here, which varies on U.S. currency, stands for November, the 11th month of the year. 2 times 11, the 22nd day, half of 11, 1 o'clock is when he died. Okay. Well, coincidence or not, I suspect it is, but I can't prove that. It becomes even more interesting when you find out that that number is actually a code number for the mint where the currency is printed. And guess where the mint for number 11 is? It is in Dallas. So it is certainly interesting, but I suspect it's a coincidence, such as this one, the 9/11 bill. If you take this bill, it's a legitimate U.S. $20 bill, you fold it in this fashion, and you take a look at that, and you take a look at that, there's an interesting coincidence. Pretty amazing. Of course, what's really amazing is that someone has found this. That there are people who go around folding U.S. currency to see what it reveals about the future. And when you fold it in a different way, then you get the Pentagon with the rocket hitting it. And yet when you fold it another way, we find out who did all of this. Who would ever have thought that our fortune is depicted in U.S. currency? If you were playing bridge and you picked up this hand of cards from a randomly shuffled deck, what would you think? That somehow it was fixed, that someone was cheating, very adept magician or whatever. It would not cross your mind that this could happen by chance. It could. That's a mathematical probability. It can be calculated. Of course, it's very, very unlikely. But mathematicians have calculated the odds of this, and they make a rough estimate of the number of hands of bridge that are played in the world every year. And they conclude that roughly once every 4 years, someone somewhere in the world, from a perfectly randomly shuffled deck, will be dealt a hand like that. And they will be, of course, absolutely convinced that either someone was cheating or a paranormal event had occurred, not thinking that this was chance alone. Yet, if they picked up this hand of cards, they would never give it a second thought. And yet, the probability of this being dealt is exactly the same as of the one before, but our attention is riveted to the one before because of the way that we play cards. This one has no specific meaning. Now, why do I bring this up? Because when we look at fortune tellers and psychics, this is exactly what they do. They tell you all kinds of things. One of them you'll remember because it happens to coincide with something you know. That is the truth. And you remember that, but you remember everything else. You forget everything else that they've said. Because most people don't check. I do. I keep records of the record of psychics. And it's remarkably poor. Here's just one example. This goes back to 1993. I like to use this because, of course, enough time has passed that if any of these events would have happened, they would have happened already. The Clintons have not split up, if anyone ever had a motivation to do so. has not happened. Paula Abdul did not elope with Arsenio. That is not why she left American Idol. Martina did not have John McEnroe's baby or anyone else's. And Donald Trump did not have a fling with Barbara Walters, or if he did, they kept it very secret. And one can go through the predictions and show that, in fact, if anything, psychics have a negative power. Something they predict is less likely to happen. Of course, if you make enough predictions, some of them will hit, and people tend to remember these. And they're also very good psychologists. You know, they don't predict unreasonable things. They predict things that have a reasonable chance of coming true. They're very good psychologists, and they're very adept at doing what we call cold reading. Sylvia Brown is a classic example of this. Probably the most famous psychic in the world. She makes millions of dollars selling her books, running her psychic sessions. She is another fraud of the worst kind, because I think it's all an act. There are some of these people who are self-delusional, who actually think that they are psychics. I don't think Sylvia Brown falls into that category. She's very, very good at cold reading. She entertains people. She's often on with Larry King, who is a remarkable pacifist in this area, because, of course, he knows where his bread is buttered. These kind of issues bring in ratings. You know. Talking to the dead always works. John Edward is on there, James Van Praagh. Everyone likes to talk to the dead. The trouble is, they don't talk back. Anyway, Sylvia Brown makes all kinds of predictions. Some of them are amusing. Most of them, of course, are wrong. But she also destroys lives. If you take a look at this story, for example, when she told these unfortunate parents that their child was still alive, had, you know, been kidnapped, etc., turned out, of course, that the child was not alive, giving false hope in a ridiculous fashion. This is pure evil. So psychic stuff, you know, as a form of entertainment, I guess, is okay. But when you're dealing with things like this, interfering with people's lives, it isn't okay. There are also events which people think are paranormal, but the fact is that they don't actually exist. Like the full moon effect. Widespread belief that there's more crime at the full moon, more accidents at the full moon, etc. That the moon has an effect on us. Why? Because it has an effect on the tides, which of course it does. And we are 70% water, therefore it has an effect on us. A totally illogical argument. Yes, the moon has an effect on the ocean, because gravitational forces depend on the masses of the two objects involved. The mass of the ocean is significant relative to the mass of the moon. The mass of the human body is insignificant compared to the mass of the moon. The gravitational pull of the nurse who stood beside you when you were born was greater than the gravitational pull of the moon. And furthermore, although it is true that we are made of 70% water, we're not an empty container with the water sloshing around like the ocean. It is locked up in ourselves. So the analogy in no way holds true. The term lunatic goes back to the ancient Romans, who already believed that the moon had some kind of an effect on people. Well, because if something bad happens and you look up and there's a full moon, you make the association. Uncritically, you don't check it. If you're a policeman and you had a terrible night and you look up and full moon, say, oh yeah, it's because of the full moon. Sometime in the future, you may have another bad night, look up and it's a full moon, reinforces it. But what you forget is how many times in between you may have had a bad night, but there was no full moon, so there was nothing to associate with, you forget. Right? The only way to study this is by looking at the police blotters, looking at hospital admission records, and what do we find? There is no full moon effect. When you look at the numbers, you look at the statistics, things are randomly distributed, just as one might expect. But people are convinced of the full moon effect because they have very selective memory. Similarly with astrology. People have very selective memory. If an astrologer tells you something that turns out to be true, you remember that. astrology is pure bunk. It has to be. There are numerous astrological systems around the world. They don't agree with each other. They all make different predictions. So which one is right? Well, of course, in terms of gravitational effect, it's all nonsense. The planets, stars don't have any effect on the human body that is measurable in any way. But this kind of stuff can cause real difficulties. When the president of the U.S. starts to believe in astrology, then we have an issue here. We're talking about President Reagan and Nancy. They had a White House astrologer, Joan Quigley, who was advising the president when to meet Gorbachev, when to make decisions, etc. Where was Ms. Quigley in the San Francisco earthquake of 1989? Smack in the middle of it, with her house collapsing on her. The astrologer that was giving the president of the U.S. advice on when to meet foreign leaders and how to carry out foreign policy couldn't even tell that her house was going to collapse. So you don't really need to read books about astrology being disproved. I think use a bit of logic, recognize the fact that it is absolute nonsense. Sure, it's entertaining when you look at it in the newspaper because they tell you pleasant things. They don't tell you you're ugly and you're going to die, right? They tell you that you're a good person and have lots of friends and fortune is coming your way. There are some absurd explanations for so-called paranormal phenomena. Spontaneous combustion, people bursting into flame and disappearing. No, it doesn't happen. There are some curious things. There are people who have, in fact, been incinerated with parts of their body remaining. That's a legitimate picture, well documented. And there have been cases like this. Happens to people generally who are overweight, sitting in upholstered chairs. There always is a source of ignition around, and they catch fire. And with the right air currents, under the right conditions, it is possible for part of the body to burn and not the other part. This has been demonstrated with pigs, dead pigs. They've been able to do exactly that and see that some of the limbs survive. So there's nothing paranormal about this. But the real troublesome area we come to now, this is fraud. This is when magic tricks are used, pretending that they are not magic tricks, that someone actually has powers. Here's perhaps a more trivial example, the crop circles, which began to appear in 1978 in England. Really mysterious things. Overnight, wheat fields, cornfields had all of these designs. All kinds of explanations came forward. Oh, aliens with lasers. Now, why aliens with lasers would be targeting our cornfields with these shapes, I mean, no one was able to explain. But you know what? Even scientists proposed explanations of wind systems, vortexes that would cleave out these particular patterns. And that it had to be some unusual thing because it just couldn't happen overnight like this with all of these intricate patterns. Well, yes, it could. And it took no high technology. It took a couple of inventive Brits, some rope, and a wooden plank. They even videoed it and showed how in just a few hours they could stomp out those geometric patterns. Had absolutely nothing to do with aliens, nothing to do with any paranormal phenomena. Now, magicians, as I suggested earlier, are honest charlatans. A magician will never say that what they're doing requires any kind of supernatural power. They will just not explain how they're doing it. It's purely for entertainment purposes. One of the greatest magicians of all time, Harry Blackstone Sr., here performing the levitating head. It is indeed a great illusion because the head does talk. I don't have a levitating head. At least not one that's detached from the body. But I do have a way of showing you how the levitating head illusion is done. Because all you require is a piece of equipment like this. I'm not going to make a head appear. Well, actually, I will. Except that the head is going to be on a coin. And it certainly looks like it appears out of nowhere. If you missed that one, let me do it again. I'll just squash some atoms here, throw them up in the air, and catch it there. You see how that works, and they are real coins with real heads, right, appearing out of nowhere. Well, of course, they can't appear out of nowhere. It just looks as if they do. This is called black art, simply meaning black against black does not show. There's a pocket in there, the coins are hidden behind. Looks like they appear. So, you know how that's done. It's with proper lighting, wearing a black turtleneck. It looks as if the thing is levitating. The human brain can be misled by such optical illusions. Or like this one. A little bottle here with a thread. When I blow into it, the thread goes round and round. Why this exists, I cannot tell you. But I can show you something interesting with it. I have a little hoop here, which is solid. Just make sure that that really is solid. Yes. There's no holes there anyway, except the one in the middle. Right? Okay. Look at this. The thread is a solid thread. You see that hoop go right through that solid thread? Well, of course, it doesn't go through the thread. Matter does not pass through matter. What happens is what must happen. The thread must come in and out. It just goes so fast that you don't notice it. Keep your eye on the tip of the thread. Oh, sorry, they're too slow there. Comes in and goes out very, very quickly. So, magicians, of course, play on this idea of using optical tricks, making sure that you're looking at the wrong place at the right time, etc. And it is indeed very entertaining. But when the same kind of entertaining tricks are used to convince people that it's happening for real, then it's a very, very different story. Psychic surgeons, generally in the Philippines, or sometimes in South America, are sort of uneducated peasants who claim that they can remove tumors from people's bodies without making an incision. And they actually demonstrate how this is done. And it looks very, very impressive. Looks kind of gory, but it can look very, very impressive. They prey on the desperate. They prey on people who are afflicted with diseases like cancer, who can't be helped by traditional methods. They go to the Philippines and they're told that the tumors can be removed from their body. And this comes without pain, without making any incision. And indeed, you see it, even from close up. Let me demonstrate it to you. I would once again need a volunteer who is willing to travel, all right? We'll abscond with this chair here for a second. Come on over here and have a seat. You have just traveled to the Philippines. Okay? All right. Now, we're going to pretend that there's a problem and the problem is in here. There actually is no problem in there, is there? No, nothing out of the ordinary? Okay. But let's say that we've diagnosed that the problem is in here, and we're going to remove it. I'm going to remove it with my bare hands. So I'm going to dig into your head. It should be kind of painless. A little pressure you might feel, that's all. Now, in a real life psychic surgery, you'd see a piece of chicken liver being drawn out, or maybe a piece of cotton soaked in blood. I don't want to be so gory, so we're going to let this little silk represent the gore and the guts. Actually, I'm not telling you the truth. It really isn't silk, it's polyester. There, that was in there clogging up the machinery. Does that explain anything?
Yeah, my math test.
Your math test, okay. Well, I want you to do well in math, so I don't want you to go back to your seat empty-headed. So let me, I'm going to put it back. I'm not going to remove anything permanently. There. How's that? Fine? The hole is completely closed. Okay, now, you didn't see what I was doing. They all saw. Let me show you what I did. With my bare hand, I reached into your head, and I took this out. And then I put it back in your head, just like that. That's what I did. Okay? Hard to believe. Believe it. Now I can assure you that was not done by any kind of paranormal means. Perfectly explicable scientific methodology. Same methodology they use, but of course they pretend that it is for real. Preying on the desperate, converting them into desperate and destitute as well, because these are not cheap things. Houdini was one of the first to talk about these kind of things in public. He became very, very disenchanted with mediums and spiritualists, because although he was very scientifically minded, when his mom passed away, he was desperate, and he sought out mediums, hoping to talk to her. And, of course, no success. In fact, more than no success, he saw that they were frauds, especially in one case, when a medium said that, in fact, she had connected to his mother, and she was ready to speak, and the medium made the sign of the cross on the paper, that's how the mother was starting to speak. Houdini, of course, being the son of a rabbi, knew that this would not be the message that the mother would be sending. And furthermore, the message came through in English. She never learned to speak that language. Her mother tongue was Yiddish. It's the only thing she spoke. So unless they have some very good Berlitz schools on the other side, she would have spoken in Yiddish. So he became very disenchanted with this, and he lectured about this, including here at McGill in 1926 in the McCord Museum, where he gave his classic last lecture on exposing fake mediums. And I think that we need to rename that the room where that lecture was delivered in the McCord Museum in honor of Houdini. We need to do that. So McGill was the last place where he gave his science lecture on spiritualists. And unfortunately, he passed away a few days later because of a blow to the stomach by a McGill student, but we forget about that part of our history. He saw that the mediums in the seance rooms were doing the same kind of things that he was doing on the stage. He would make hands levitate. The mediums would do that too. And he showed technically, you know, how these kind of things were done. I mean, obviously. It's all done with third hands. So, yeah. And he had a great response to, you know, showing all of this. Because in those days, mediums were running amok. People were spending all kinds of money on going to mediums, having their fortunes told, speaking to the dead. So Houdini had this tremendous role that he played in bringing science into the paranormal field. There's a wonderful book called The Psychic Mafia, which I think is available on Amazon by Lamar Keane, who's a former psychic who has gone straight, and he tells of all of the tricks that are used in order to defraud people. It makes for a really amazing read. He talks about things like psychokinesis, which is one of the main points that psychics try to get across, that they can dematerialize objects, move objects by the power of the mind. Uri Geller is the classic in this case, a former Israeli magician who rose to fame in the 1970s, bending spoons, bending keys, and of course, bending minds. He is still with us today, still doing the same kind of stuff that he was doing back then. The idea is that he can take solid metal objects, spoons, like this, solid, bang it, try to bend it. That is one tough spoon, right? This is what Uri Geller does. He takes that spoon, and in full view of everyone, softens the metal and bends it. You see that? Look at that. Look how soft it's become. Yeah? But you know that it's impossible to do that. Bang it against it. Can you bend that? No. So obviously the only way that that can be done is by the power of the mind. There's absolutely no other way that this can be done. Well, one wonders though, I mean, if someone has this remarkable ability of being able to bend metal by the power of the mind, surely there's a better use to which this can be put than tormenting cutlery, right? And of course, it would be great to see him do this under controlled conditions. Uri Geller came to North America first in the 1970s, and he was a guest on the Johnny Carson show. In fact, the next day after he came to North America, he was a guest there. And he was going to perform his usual stunts, of course, which he says are for real. Unfortunately for Geller, who claims to be a psychic, he did not know that Johnny Carson was an excellent amateur magician. So one of the effects that Geller did back then, in fact still does, is determining the presence of water in a hidden location. He douses for water. Today, he douses for gold, he douses for oil, all these kind of things. Back then, it was in film canisters for water. So he would go off stage. They would take about a dozen of these empty film canisters, put water into one, mix them around, leave them on the table. He would come back, hover his hand over it, not touching, and tell you which one had the water. And he got it right. Except on the Johnny Carson show. So he went off stage, he comes back, he sits down, he kind of bangs into the table as he sits down, and he starts to get a little bit frustrated. He's hovering his hand, and now he's tired, he's giving explanations that he had just come over from England, and his psychic abilities were not working properly because he was fatigued and all of this. Gets up, walks around a little bit more, sits down again, banging into the table, again nothing happens. And he failed. And eventually he just gave up. He said that this actually proves that he's for real, because there's all this evidence that he's done this before, and if he were just doing a magic trick, it would work all the time. But because it works sometimes and not other times, it must be real. And some people buy this. Well, it didn't work. And it didn't work for a very legitimate scientific reason. They had crazy glued all of the containers onto the table while he was off stage. Because the way that this trick works is that you just bang the table a little bit, and of course one of the canisters, the one with water in it, is heavier, it doesn't move. The others all rattle. And you just train yourself to see which one doesn't move, and all it takes is one little bang. Now, one little bang didn't do it because they were glued to the table, so he gets up and he was practically kicking the table, which was very amusing to those of us who were watching it, you know, knowing exactly what was going on. And then the next day, he's on Donahue. Everything worked. Keys bent, spoons bent, water trick worked, either because he didn't care or didn't know how it was done, and he just went for the entertainment value. And of course, most people are unaware of the fact that there are magic catalogs out there where you can buy key warpers for insignificant amounts of money and pays very big dividends for someone like Uri Geller. But surely, to use a magic trick like this to convince someone that they have mental powers is absolute fraud. That's what it is. And that's what happens in seance rooms. It is still happening today. They see things happening. Spirits appear. Spirit bells ring. That's the appearance of a spirit. This is a spirit bell. Does it ring? No, because the seance has not yet started. But now we're going to call upon those spirits. And I think they have appeared. So the bell rings. that the spirit's bell ring.
He's a perfect pitch.
Something moves?
Yeah.
Well, of course something moves to ring the bell. The knocker here moves, but only the spirits can move it. Of course it moves. Right? The spirit bell. Neat trick. But I can tell you that there's a lot of science involved. Hopefully you'll never find out what the science is. Joseph Dunninger was a wonderful magician. He was a mentalist. And he really got all of this ESP and psychic stuff going back in the 1940s and 1950s. Although, of course, he never said that he was doing anything paranormal. But the stuff he did was so unbelievable that people concluded that it had to be for real. He was able to make things appear and make things disappear with the power of the mind. I have here a little container, which is empty. Is that correct? Then put your little finger in there. That's an empty container. And I have here something we call a lifesaver. Yes? Okay. I'm going to put this pack of lifesavers into this empty brass cylinder. It is going in there in front of your eyes. Yes? Okay. It has not gone up my sleeve. I've not palmed it. If I were able to do that, that would be a better trick than what you're going to see. Hold this for a moment. I'm going to now dematerialize that lifesaver, take it out of there, put it in my pocket, and I'll put it back. What do you see?
It's not there.
It's not there. It is completely empty, yes? It has vanished because I have mentally dematerialized it. If you don't like that one, all right, let me do a classic Dunninger. A piece of wood. Yes? Look at it. Examine it. Piece of wood. Listen, when a magician lets you examine something, don't bother. Because let me tell you, if you had a chance of finding anything, you'd never be allowed to examine it. Now, we're going to try an experiment here, which may not work because I'm tired. But I'm going to see if I can just balance this on there. And I'm going to try to tip it over purely by concentrating on it. Okay? Now, please, if we can have some quiet here. That's one of the toughest ones. Luckily, it's almost at the end. So the mind can do wonderful things. Make lifesavers disappear, tip over blocks of wood. But I will leave you with a classic Dunninger effect, which was one of the ones that convinced people that extrasensory perception had to be real. I'm going to need one last volunteer. You can stay right where you are. You don't have to come down, okay, but stand up. Okay. What I have here are four cards. Just walk out here so I can see you. Okay. I have four cards, and they are the four queens. For now, you just have to believe me that that's what they are. Two black queens and two red queens. You are going to tell me to remove two of those queens invisibly from this pack. Choose either the red or the black, your free choice. Tell me which ones to remove. No, the red or black?
Red.
I will take the two red cards, remove them, invisibly put them here. You chose the red cards. They're there. That leaves me with the two black cards here. Okay? The black cards are the Queen of Spades and the Queen of Clubs. You're going to tell me which one of those two cards to invisibly turn around, the Queen of Spades or the Queen of Clubs. I will now take out invisibly the queen of clubs, turn it around, and put it back in. Okay? The two black cards are here, the two invisible red cards are there. I will now pick up those two invisible red cards and put them back into the deck. So we have the four cards. You selected specifically one queen. It could have been any of the four queens. You selected one queen. Now for the first time, we will take a look at those four cards and notice that the queen that is turned around is the queen of clubs. What is also quite amazing is that you selected the queen of clubs. Why? Because it's the only one that has a red back. The others are all blue. But you know what? It is, in fact, the only card that you could possibly have selected. You know why? Because the others are all blank. There's only one possible explanation for all of this, and that is, of course, that I have the mental power of suggesting which card had to be chosen, because the only card here that fit the trick was the Queen of Clubs. So while we were doing this invisible stuff, that just gave me time to think. So I was concentrating, Queen of Clubs, Queen of Clubs, and you, of course, were very receptive, and triumphantly I was able to reveal that thought had been transmitted. That was an illusion introduced by Joseph Dunninger, and you can see how easy it is to convince people that psychic phenomena exist. But I leave you with one last idea, and that is that when we look at phenomena around us, we have to be good observers. We have to make sure that what we see is really what we think we see. Observation is more than just seeing, it is coming to conclusion. Because just seeing can be misleading. We want to look underneath and make sure that we are on the right track. And next time someone approaches you and says that they've seen a paranormal feat or some psychic phenomena, ask yourself this question. Is it more probable that nature should go out of her course or that a man should tell a lie? And I think you know the answer to that one. So I thank you very much for your attention. And
thanks, Joe. And now we turn to the skill testing part of our demonstration tonight. And I'd ask people to write questions down, and our volunteers will collect them up, and then I'll ask a selection of the questions. And there's a wonderful present here for Joe, which is right here, which I'll now give to him. Thanks, Joe.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I just want to look at those things. There's extra points for writing legibly. Questions are pre-screened for the dean. Ah, here's kind of an interesting one. Okay, Joe, so we're off and running. Is it possible for some people to be more intuitive by nature?
I think that depends on how one interprets the word intuitive. Psychics are very intuitive. I mean, that is exactly what their talent is based upon. They can look at you and from the conversation that you have, pick up certain hints and make something of it. Yes, I mean, it's possible for people to be more intuitive like that. It's possible for people to be very, very good observers. But I don't think that that has anything to do with having any special paranormal talent.
Okay. Why can some people get the Ouija board to spell out sensible things and it won't budge for non-believers?
Mm-hmm. The Ouija board is a very interesting piece of equipment. For those of you who are not familiar, it's a wooden board with letters on it, and there's this little sort of triangular tool that can glide over it. You put your hands on it and ask a question, and it will spell out words in answer to your question. Works for some people, not for others. course, what is happening there is the so-called ideomotor effect. Nothing to do with idiots. The ideomotor effect means involuntary movements. And it's exactly the same kind of thing that happens with dowsing, where you have people hold a pendulum and it swings one way if you ask one question, another way. They don't understand the fact that they're involuntarily moving it. With the Ouija board, it's very easy to demonstrate that that is what is happening, because all you have to do is put blindfolds on people and scramble the letters on the Ouija board. So nothing ever comes out. No meaningful words come out. They actually are guiding the thing. And the reason that it only works for people who believe it is because subconsciously they're the ones who are likely to guide it.
What are your thoughts on the placebo effect? And can this be positive for people who have these things like these psychic surgeries?
The placebo effect is the most powerful effect in medicine. 40-50% of people respond to some degree to placebos. Whether you're talking about conventional medicine or whether you're talking about alternative medicine, this is the single best tool that any therapist has. It is a very real effect. It does stem from the mind, yes, but it has physiological explanation, which indeed can be proven. You can take someone who has terrible pain, you give them a sugar pill, telling them that it's a wonderful new pain medication, and their pain will resolve. And then you give them a drug called naloxone, and the pain comes back. Because naloxone blocks the action of the body's own natural opiates called the endorphins. So you can actually demonstrate the placebo effect has a physiological function. It's very real, and it should be made use of. Of course, you have to make sure that there's no underlying treatable medical condition. The same way that there's a very real placebo effect, there's also a very real nocebo effect. So that if you believe that something is going to harm you, you can actually have symptoms. If you believe that an artificial sweetener is damaging to your health, you can actually get sick from consuming such a product.
Okay, this one I was thinking about too. What happens when science doesn't seem to match our common sense perception of reality? And you mentioned quantum mechanics when you're speaking.
Well, science doesn't have the answers to everything. You know, it's only the non-scientists who accuse us scientists of thinking that we have the answer to everything. I mean, a good scientist will never say that they know everything. In fact, the more you do in science, the more you recognize that you don't know. I really don't know much about quantum mechanics, nor do I care to know much about it. But I understand that there are enough people who know and who can explain some of those. And when science clashes with common sense is usually wrong. Common sense is not maybe common, but it isn't necessarily sensible.
Here's another kind of interesting thing that's bugging me too. Are there any scientific experiments or theories about a human psychological need to believe these unbelievable things?
Yeah, it's called religion.
That was my question later on. But somebody else asked it too, so I'll pitch it to you now. Do you think science can tell you something about religious beliefs?
Science could tell something about religious beliefs?
Yes.
The need for it by some people. Yeah. It's the old expression that if God doesn't exist, it's necessary to invent him because it gives people comfort. It's not a pleasant thought to think that this is all there is and that once this is over and you're gone, there's nothing to look forward to. It's much more seductive to think that there's something to go towards. I don't think science can tell us anything about what there is. And I don't think that science and religion are really at odds. I mean, even in the creation process, I mean, I think any legitimate scientist will agree that the Earth is billions of years old, not 5,700 years old. But let's face it, no matter what you do, you get back to a point where you have to say, where did that come from? And then belief comes in.
When you talked about, you know, extracting these guys doing the psychic surgery of extracting the tumors by hand, wouldn't the person who had pain before the operation is just transparently revealed after they had the operation, nothing happened because they still felt the same pain. Why wouldn't they then say, what's up with this?
Often they don't feel the same pain because this is a classic example of a placebo effect. And the psychic surgeons, of course, are very, very good at determining who is a good candidate for their psychic surgery. I mean, they will never claim to remove an external tumor, okay? It's always a tumor that is invisible. And, of course, the person will feel better because of placebo effect, although for a short time. This is the same kind of idea that you see with Sunday morning preachers, you know, on TV. The hands-on healing, people walk up with crutches, and they walk off without crutches. Of course, what you don't see is 5 minutes later, they're writhing in pain on the floor backstage because the placebo effect only lasts so long, you know. And when you go up to St. Joseph's Oratory, you see all those crutches hanging on the wall, you know. I mean, I'm not sure exactly what that means. The one that really confuses me is you see the artificial limbs hanging on the wall. Did these people regrow their legs or what?
Deja vu, does it exist?
Deja vu definitely exists. Deja vu is the phenomenon whereby you come upon a scene or a situation and you know that you've seen it before, but you also know that it's impossible. You know, you've traveled to a part of the world where you've never been before. You go around the corner and all of a sudden there's a scene and you know that you've just seen this before. Psychologists have an explanation for this. And it deals with circuits in the brain. And it's a distinction between long-term memory and short-term memory. And the explanation that they offer is that, in fact, you have seen that scene before, not in a previous life or anything like that, but a fraction of a second before. And it's just that the information somehow went astray and got stored in the part of the brain where long-term information is stored instead of short-term, and you get the illusion of long-term memory, of déjà vu. That's the explanation that is offered. I don't know, you know, how one would really go about testing that. But of course, it's, I guess, not impossible that you saw it in a former life, because we could never prove a negative. You can't prove that that didn't happen.
What are the dangers that these frauds represent in our society?
Well, in the case of offering medical treatment, such as a psychic surgery, it's an obvious hazard, because there have been situations where people have foregone traditional therapy and gone the psychic route. And then, of course, there's an absolute danger. But I think the real danger is that by believing in one type of fraud, you're conditioned to believe in nonsense of all kinds, because it demonstrates a lack of critical thinking. And if you start believing, you know, in spirit bells and objects, you know, bending by the power of the mind, you can believe every other nonsense too.
I think that now there's only time left for one more question, which is my question. And they're all kind of variations on this question, the last two that I have up here. So science can certainly, the scientific method tells you how to do something, you can repeat experiments and have phenomena that can be under controlled circumstances. Are there things that science can't tell you anything about, that science can't reach into that realm?
I think there's many things that science can't tell us about. One of the points that I brought up was in the whole creation process. I mean, no matter what, we are arguing about details because nobody knows where everything came from. You always get back to a point where you have to say, well, you know, where did that come from? There are many other things that science doesn't have an explanation for, but that doesn't mean that there is not an explanation. It just means that we haven't yet arrived at the explanation. You know, no one used to believe that ulcers could be caused by bacteria. It was looked at as a ridiculous idea. No one had an explanation really for what caused ulcers, so we came up with a theory. The theory was that stress is what causes it, right? Well, eventually enough observations were made and science came to the fore. But no, science doesn't have all the answers. But it does allow us to make observations and hopefully put us on track towards the proper conclusion. You've got to make the right observations, you see. You see one spot here, correct? One spot, and the other side has four. Well, not really true, because the first side really has three. And the other side really has six. Now, I know some of you are very clever and say, of course, it's just with appropriate placement of hands, right? But it really does have three. And the other one really does have six, you see. So I'm not just hiding the spots. So now you get the whole point. This side, of course, has three, and the other side has eight. So you've got to make the right observation and come to the conclusion.
Okay. I'd like to thank the organizers and volunteers and technicians. Please fill out the questionnaires and hand them to our volunteers, our skilled volunteers at the back. Next week, same bat time, same bat channel, we will have Bruno Tremblay from the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences, and he's going to focus in on what is the role of climate scientists in the climate change debate, something as relevant as yesterday's newspaper. So we'll see you next week at 6 p.m. for registration and refreshments. Thanks again to Joe.